Guilt is the opposite of taking responsibility. So it's feeling guilty about something that you've done. That doesn't mean you're taking responsibility.
Welcome to the Inspired to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast. Today, I am honored to welcome Efrat Wolfson, a renowned holistic sexual wellness coach and an embodied psychosexual practitioner. As the founder of the Passion Academy, Efrat has empowered over 5,000 people since 2015 to reconnect with passion, pleasure, and purpose in their lives. She brings a compassionate and nuanced understanding of relationships, especially when it comes to breaking the cycle of attachment and reclaiming one's self-worth. In this episode, we'll be diving deep into the challenging patterns that keep people tied to toxic dynamics and how to find true freedom after walking away from a narcissistic relationship. Efrat, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. So great to be here.
It's so good to have you, and it's so great to reconnect with you after so many years. Can you believe it's been almost a decade since we first met? Before we dive into this episode, I would love to know, what was the first thing that you did this morning to set the tone for your day?
Well, I actually went on a morning walk. There's this beautiful park that is close to my home that I love to go. And then there's some trees that I love to kind of sit and do my morning practice, meditation, or movement around. That's how I love starting my day usually.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. I also start my day every day with a walk with my dog, but a meditation out in nature sounds divine.
Yeah, it's been like, for me, I guess, just having my feet on the earth can be such an incredible practice. So when I go for my walk, I usually have my shoes off. I just walk around. It sparks some interesting conversations with the passerbys as well. And yeah, it's a wonderful way to start the morning.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And it would be so centering as well. I remember being up in Cronulla years ago and meditating by the beach. And there were some people that walked past. Someone was actually doing a cold plunge. And this lady actually called out to me and she's like, I love that you're meditating. That's so nice. And I think when we meditate, especially when we're out in public, out in nature as well, it encourages other people to also center and ground themselves. It's actually almost infectious, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people come up to me and ask, what kind of practice is this? Because the movement practice I do in the mornings, it includes rubbing my sacrum and like spinning the hips around in circles and stuff like that. And I've had people come up and ask me like, oh, what kind of practice is this? And I would explain to them, it's like a sexual wellness practice. And it sparks really interesting inspiration, I guess, when we're just okay with doing our practices out in the open. I think it's great.
Yeah, of course. I would love to know, and I'm sure the listeners would too, what do you specifically help people with and how do you assist them, especially in the realm of healing and sexuality? How do you assist them to reconnect with their body and their sense of pleasure?
I work mostly with women around connecting with their body and pleasure and passion and aliveness. And this is done through somatic practices, so through the body mostly, but also through coaching. And it's really a holistic approach. So it has both somatic practices and deals with our emotional and mental and energetic bodies all at once, you could say. And usually people would come to me when they're experiencing issues in their sexuality of some way, either things like low libido or not really having that spark anymore in a long-term relationship, or chronic yeast infections or incontinence or pelvic pain. So sort of pelvic floor issues is a common one that people come to me as well. Things like that, and just really wanting to enjoy more their sexuality. And what's amazing is that, I guess, like our sexuality is so much more than just about sex. And so someone might come because they can't orgasm, for example, but then through doing this work, they can actually suddenly find their voice and express their truth in the world and find a new job or leave a bad relationship and find a new healthy one, or like all these other things can open up for you when you're connected to that sexual energy and that power center within you. So it's quite a broad range of things that can happen with this work.
That's so amazing. And you've been doing it for so long. I remember you were doing this work about 7 years ago, and obviously so much has evolved and you have a really holistic approach as well. I would love to know, for those that are struggling with feeling like they are stuck, they're just not happy. Maybe they're unsatisfied in their relationship and perhaps they've found themselves in a toxic dynamic without even realizing. Would you be able to shed some light? What would you recommend? And what are some things that people can do to get out of that kind of situation? Because it's hard, right? Especially when people enter relationships and it might be rushed or it might be something that they find themselves in because they didn't think they could find anything better. Could you shed some light in that regard?
Yeah, sure. I might just add something important here, that I have a very intimate understanding of the dynamics of abuse, unfortunately, because I myself was married to quite an abusive man and the father of my kids, and have gone through many, many years of having to deal with that even post-separation. And so, yeah, it's just important for me to mention that. So what I'll share now is not just through working with clients on this, but actually through my own lived experience of it. And of course, the listeners might take some and then throw the rest. You know, not everything I'm saying will be true for everyone. So just wanted to kind of mention that. In terms of how to start, I would say the first step really is to even admit to yourself that it is abusive and that something here is not okay. You, Phoebe, have a podcast episode about the signs. So I would say that's really important to listen to if you haven't listened to that one. Just really be sure that this is actually abuse. Because one of the reasons it's so hard to leave an abusive relationship is that often it takes years before you actually realize that you are in an abusive relationship. And that's what happened to me. I already had a child with this person by the time I realized this is abuse. Something's not right here. So I guess the first step is to really acknowledge this is abuse. This is not okay. And one of the ways to start unpacking that is not only understanding the signs, but also to start discussing it with others. Abuse thrives in silence.
Yeah.
And it often happens in the darkness, like where we can't see. Right. And that's what happened to me. None of my friends really knew what was going on because my ex, he wouldn't do the abusive things right in front of them. And even saying that, the abuse can be also very hidden. It's not like he would wake up in the morning and tell me, oh, you're stupid, you this. You know, it wasn't something like very, very obvious. Mm-hmm. It would have been really hard to pick up on even if they did see, right? So starting to break the silence around what you are experiencing is really, really important. Making sure that the people around you know that you think that you're being abused, and then start to just share different scenarios, different things that are happening, and just ask for feedback. Like, does this sound okay to you? Am I exaggerating? Like, is this real? Because what often happens is the gaslighting, right? I don't know if you've talked about gaslighting on the podcast already.
Oh, yeah. We've discussed it a little bit. So for those that are tuning in that haven't come across or haven't listened yet to episode 51 and 52, we actually specifically talk about narcissistic partners and why narcissists exploit the vulnerable and how to spot the red flags. And we also talk about how to set boundaries and spot these red flags early on so that you can leave before it gets too difficult, like when you fall pregnant or have kids with them or already married. And so I would love to firstly hear your thoughts on what gaslighting is, how do we define it, and why is it so hard to understand gaslighting? I myself took time to wrap my head around it.
Yeah. So the term gaslighting, I find that it's being a little bit overused nowadays sometimes. So just to make it really clear, gaslighting is not when someone says something that annoys you. It's not it. Anytime someone says something and you disagree, oh, you're gaslighting me. Like, no, it's a very specific term. It's taken from this movie. I think it was called Gaslight or something like that, where this phenomenon was happening. The other person is actually really trying deliberately to confuse your sense of reality. So, for example, they might hide your car keys, and then when you're looking for them, they'll be like, oh, you always lose your stuff, and then suddenly put them back somewhere and make you feel, oh my God, I'm crazy. I just passed here 500 times and why am I seeing it now? Or they might say something really horrible to you, and then when you take them up on it, they'll be like, I never said that. What do you mean? I've never said that. You're imagining things. I literally did not say that. And you know that they did, but because it keeps going, you start feeling really confused. Is my memory distorted? Maybe I didn't understand. And because you're usually dealing with someone who, if it is a narcissistic relationship, they want to harm you. And often for someone who is not narcissistic, this is really hard to get because we tend to think, oh, you know, people are just doing their best. Maybe it was a misunderstanding, right? Actually coming to terms with the fact that this was a deliberate attempt to confuse you and mislead you and make you doubt and question yourself, that's just beyond what I could fathom at the time when I was going through this. It took me years to understand that this is actually a thing, that someone could deliberately want to harm me in this way. So that's the gaslighting. Someone who is exposed to constant gaslighting will start feeling like they doubt themselves, they doubt their reality, they question their own cognitive abilities,
yeah,
and their own sanity. It can even lead to that. And so it's really, really important to be aware that that's a thing, that that can happen.
It's actually something that's so hard to process after. That for me, I think, took a lot of processing time. And I had to like put it all into a document, even take screenshots and put them into a document to remind myself, actually, this did happen. Stop telling yourself that it didn't and that you should be just not thinking about them. I guess we're jumping forward a little bit in this conversation, but I'm just going to touch on trauma bonding, which is also something that we discussed in a previous episode. So for anyone that's listening, there's an episode with Audrey where we talk about trauma bonding a little bit more. But I think trauma bonding is very real, especially for adults who as children may have experienced emotionally inconsistent or even unhealthy family dynamics. Whether it was a lack of consistent attention from their caregivers or being placed even in a caretaker role or growing up in an enmeshed or chaotic environment. Those sorts of patterns can become deeply familiar. And as adults, it's very easy for unhealthy relationships to feel normal for some of those people who have had those experiences. And we may not even recognize the red flags until we talk to other people, such as a therapist, for example, and reflect through either journaling or doing some deeper inner work. So without that level of self-awareness, often these patterns can repeat themselves unconsciously.
Absolutely. And I think you said something really important, because if we go back to that topic of how do we leave, then we were saying, you know, start acknowledge that this is abuse, start talking to people about it, and then actually document. I would say like really document everything that's happening, because you're probably under a lot of gaslighting. And so if you straight away after a conversation, you write down or even record conversations just so you can go back to things and actually look at what's really going on, not in your stories and not in your like justifications, but what actually is happening here. And that documentation is really, really important. I didn't do that for a very long time. And I think if I had, I probably would have left a lot sooner. And that's a really important part of the process, I would say. Like, write down everything that's happening. And then I just wanted to touch on, you were saying how you went back. And this is something I hear a lot, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard this in generally in society, where people are like, oh, well, why does she go back then? Like, people in abusive relationships are stupid or something, right? Why do they go back to the abuser? If they're so bad, then just leave him, right? And I think it's really important to address this point, because I've done that as well. I left and I came back and I left and I came back, exactly like all the books. And it's important to understand that people who are under abuse, they're not stupid. what they are is addicted. There is actually a physical addiction to the highs and lows.
Yeah.
The abusive relationship, because there's this horrible crash and something horrible happens. But then there's like this super high, usually, when they come back and apologize. Suddenly there's this like almost euphorian kind of sensation. It really is like drugs. From a neurochemical perspective, it's pretty much the same what's happening in our bodies, because our emotions are like that. They can be a kind of drug.
It's actually in books, it's confirmed in a lot of research and a lot of psychology books that firstly, it takes an average of 7 times. And this is a statistic people can definitely look up. And not only does it take an average of 7 times for a person to leave a toxic relationship or a toxic dynamic, particularly a romantic relationship, but yes, it is confirmed that it is as addictive as being on heroin and drugs. For anyone that has been through a toxic relationship, it's really, really important not to feel guilty and not to feel bad, not to judge yourself, because that happens to so many people, women, even men, and it's not something that you can control. You're literally being manipulated, emotionally and psychologically manipulated, and dealing with these highs and these lows, and it's addictive.
And there's a stigma, often people who have been in abuse, and that it's usually like women who maybe have had a horrible childhood or from very low socioeconomic background. That's actually not the case. It does go both ways. There are definitely men who are in abusive relationships. However, I feel like women are affected differently by abuse, because as a mom who, and I wanted to be a very present mom with my children and actually raise them. And so he was supporting me financially, or supporting the family, that made it way more difficult to leave as well. So if we bring in the financial aspect of it, unfortunately, we still live in a world where women do on average make a lot less money than men. Women do on average raise the children more than men. And that puts us in a very vulnerable position that a man in an abusive relationship would not be in necessarily. Sometimes, yes, but I'm just flagging that there is a difference, I think, for most people.
I think it's really important for us to touch on that. It's something that has definitely taken away a lot of women's power when they eventually become financially dependent. If a woman is in a relationship with a narcissistic man or an abuser who is financially also, I guess, more dominant, it can make it very, very difficult to leave. And there's a lot of research out there. There's a lot of evidence as well that one of the reasons why people stay and go back is because they feel financially dependent or they've got nowhere to go. I think a lot of people don't actually realize the level of support we have available, especially in this country. Like, for those that are listening that are in Australia and you've come out of maybe even a domestic violence, physical violence, or violence could be sexual assault or financial abuse, there's a lot of support out there. All it takes is to look it up and Google. Even Catelyn talked about Safe Steps. There's the Orange Door. There's so many resources out there. There's 1-800-RESPECT. That's 24/7 counseling as well for anyone that has been through something that's really abusive or harmful. But yeah, there's just so many resources out there and financial support where women can leave and not feel like they are completely dependent on that person in order to survive.
Yeah, thank you so much for naming all of that. And that reminds me, as you were listing those things, it took me back to the very last time that I finally left. And that was when we first moved to Australia, and that was 11 years ago. And I was not a resident yet. And so I didn't have access to any of these services. And that was really, really tough. And he was a resident or like a citizen. So he was holding that as another thing that he could hold over my head, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So anything that they can use against you, like, they will. And so it's amazing if you do have access to those things. That's really important. And when I work with a client on kind of trying to leave an abusive situation, there's two avenues, I think, that are really important to address. One is more the internal aspect of anchoring in my own self-worth and knowing that I am actually worthy of something a lot better than this. And the second is actually making a safety plan, knowing that you are safe to leave, because often there's just so much fear that is triggered when we want to leave. And sometimes, unfortunately and sadly, it isn't safe. And there are stories of people who have gone to very extreme measures once the person under abuse leaves them. So it is important to actually have a safety net, a safety plan in place, but also have that very strong internal anchoring of your worth and who you are and knowing yourself. And this is where the somatic stuff comes in so, so strongly, because it was only after I started to really, really anchor in my body and found those kind of practices around the sexual energy and all these things, only then could I really finally leave. And even after I finally left, by the way, it took another whole year to just really, really heal and get into a new healthy relationship, which was amazing that was possible to break that pattern for me. And I think that's something we could also maybe talk about a bit, breaking the cycle of abuse, because often people who have been in abuse, they get out of the abusive relationship and then straight into another abusive relationship.
Oh my goodness. I've heard of that way too many times. And yes, I think that's something really important to address. So I want to start by saying thank you for sharing vulnerably here and also for touching on that, because yes, there are a lot of women out there. I've even seen it on TikTok. There was one day where I was just scrolling and there was this young lady that shared about the domestic violence that she'd been through. And she even had photos and videos of her covered in bruises and covering it up with makeup, and then sharing that she was in a new relationship like a week later. It is something that occurs way more than we think, because, well, first of all, a person can go from one abusive relationship to another and not recognize the abuse in the next relationship, because firstly, the abuser is wearing a mask. No abuser, Efra, you and I can both safely say that we didn't think that our partner was abusive at the start. And he was probably really sweet, charming, and loving, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. I mean, there's that whole love bombing thing with narcissists where they know exactly all of your soft spots and deep aspirations. And they know how to kind of, it's almost like they have this key to unlock your surrendering to them in some way. And it's really important that we find what our specific keyhole is, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You know,
what is the place that they can hook into and keep dragging us back in? And this is one of the things that you can do once you leave. I would highly recommend not to get into any new relationship very fast, but actually go through this process of healing, of reclaiming who you are, understanding and addressing your quote unquote keyholes. Yes, those places inside of you that an abuser can hook into. Because nowadays, I feel like there is no way that I would be attracting a narcissist. They would be running far and fast if they meet me, because there's nowhere for them to hook in. That's very, very important work to do. And it's also a good thing for someone who is still in abuse to know, so that you can be prepared for that. And it is possible to break that cycle. It really is. And I'm a testament to that. Many women I've worked with are a testament to that. Many other women have done this, and other, not just women. And a lot of people have gone out of abuse, went through healing with themselves, and then managed to create a beautiful, healthy relationship after. So it is possible. And just know that it does require some self-reflection as well. And yeah, just take a break for a moment, not just throw ourselves into this whole, I need someone to save me. Actually find your own power of who you are, because it is there. And doing it alone is very, very hard. This is why I was talking about the safety plan. In that plan, we want to have as much support as we can around us. If that means a really good therapist, friends, family, government services that Phoebe was talking about, anything at all that you can support around you. If there's kids and property involved, then a good lawyer would be a really good idea as well. And that all goes into your plan. And once you know that you are surrounded with support, then it'll be so much easier to make that step of leaving and stay away.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I think it's really important that if you've come out of an abusive relationship, to take a pause and not rush into another relationship or move in with someone that seems like they are helping you and being really, really nice. Because what a narcissist will do is they have a bank where they bank up the amount that you feel like you owe them. And then before you know it, you feel you owe them something because they were so generous to you or so kind or helpful. Or maybe they helped you move into a new place, or maybe you're even living with them. And that's all part of their bank. And it's a manipulation tactic. And it's not genuine. And usually women that find themselves in those situations then become dependent again on a new narcissist. And it takes a few months. The love bombing will sit for a while. But before you know it, the mask starts to come off. And the day you work out that your partner is not who they said or acted like they were is a very, very frightening day.
Mm. And it's very hard because you'll be justifying, right? Because it's like, no, but they're so sweet and they love me so much and they helped me and they've done all this for me. So surely they didn't mean it.
Yeah.
And then they would be apologizing and feeling guilty as well. And here's something I really want to make really, really clear. Guilt is the opposite of taking responsibility. Mm-hmm. So feeling guilty about something that you've done, that doesn't mean you're taking responsibility. And this gets confused for a lot of people. It's like if someone is like, I remember my ex, oh, I feel so horrible the way I spoke to you. I'm so sorry. And like feeling really bad. But you know, if you didn't do this and that, then that wouldn't have aggravated me. There was always a but, first of all, in the apology, which I only realized later.
Mm.
But also feeling bad about something doesn't mean that they've actually taken responsibility. The responsibility comes from action, not from words. So the person that you're with, do they not just apologize, but actually take a step towards a new direction to make sure that it doesn't happen again? Do they actually sign up with a therapist? Are they doing something actively to change the situation and to make sure that things will change? And if the answer is no, then that's not taking responsibility. And that's, I think, a really clear distinction that we need to be able to make.
And I think it's also really important for those that are listening, if you're seeing that there's someone that you know in your life that's going through a toxic relationship, or they suddenly just seem a bit withdrawn and they suddenly seem not only withdrawn, but also different. Maybe they're a bit quieter than usual. Maybe you're not seeing them out socially as much as usual. Perhaps they seem to not be pursuing the previous hobbies or their passions the way they used to. It's really important as a friend to actually identify that in the people in your circle and to regularly reach out to those people, to those victims who might not realize it in the first 2, 3, maybe even 10 times that you tell them. But eventually, you're going to find that that person is going to need a really supportive friend who can be gentle and create space for them to share what they've been through, share their feelings, and to understand. And I know for me, when I was going through that and I was coming out of that toxic dynamic, I had safe friends and I had not safe friends. And the safe friends, they were there to not cast judgment, to be there when I was ready to come out of that, and to hold space for me. And they were such good friends. They are friends for life. And then there were the friends who seemed like they were supportive, but eventually they actually turned out to be the new supply of the narcissist. They were totally already manipulated, and they just didn't even, not only did they not know how to support me, but they didn't even know how to evaluate the situation clearly. Just remember, if your friend is going through abuse or they've gone through a toxic relationship, the last thing that you want to say to them is that it's their fault or I told you so, or any of that kind of comment. I think people say it indirectly. No one that I know has ever said that directly, but it can be hidden in actions and tone. And I think that we've just got to be very, very careful with what we say to our friends that are going through that and to not cast judgment.
Yeah, I think for me, it's actually quite tricky personally because I'm a coach as well. And I specifically have done this a lot, just helping women out of abuse. Then when a friend is going through it, what I would say to a client as a coach is quite different from what I would say to a friend. And so it can be quite tricky for me. So if it's a client, I would be a lot more firm with like, let's create a plan right now to get out of here and just be very, very firm. And we put a deadline to it and they get every week specific tasks, you know, that need to be completed by our next session together. It's very much like this because sometimes that's the pull that they need. And then we'll do all the anchoring work and all practices and all of that stuff. Mm. With a friend, I don't feel that that's necessarily right to do that because they haven't hired me as a coach and they're like, yeah, now you help me get out of here, right? So with my friends, and I say friends because I've had more than one friend, unfortunately, who was in this situation. What I do is really just continue to affirm to them that they're worthy of more, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I see you. I know what you're going through. I've been there. And you are worthy of more than this. And you are. And like, just continue to affirm that and be in that non-judgmental space because they will be saying about themselves, why am I so stupid? Why do I go back to them? Da, 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 da. Like they'll be judging themselves usually. And so I would be like, no, it's actually an addiction. And then I have sent all kinds of resources to friends about this as well, you know, just for people to understand, like, and stop judging themselves so harshly. So just continue being this loving, supportive anchor for them and be like, look, you are worthy of more. And if you need any help at all to leave that situation, please tell me. I'm here. Got a couch you can sleep on if you want. That's kind of situation. And making myself available as one of their support people. The other thing I've done with friends before is I was in this very healthy relationship that I mentioned for 8 years after leaving the abuse finally. So what I would do is like just invite my friend to spend time with me and my healthy partner to see what a healthy dynamic looks like and how we were both adoring each other and supporting and loving and being really, really kind and really gentle with each other, even if we make a mistake, stuff like that. As I remembered when I was in the abuse, being around couples who were healthy actually helped me kind of see, oh, my partner doesn't do that. So that was really helpful as well. So having that as like a modeling almost of like, this is what healthy looks like. Because often people who are in abuse, they don't even know what healthy looks like. When I was in that relationship, I mean, I was 21 when I met my ex. So he was only like my second kind of serious relationship in life. And the first one was 18. I didn't really know anything in it. It wasn't that great either. It wasn't abusive, but it wasn't like a very healthy, great relationship. So I didn't have a model. I didn't know what really good, supportive, loving communication looked like when I was with him. And having that modeled was very, very amazing, like very helpful.
Yeah, that's so tricky. It's definitely very hard when it is a friend. And it's very, very hard when you see something and you can't unsee it, but it's hard to let the other person know. Like for me, when I was in that relationship, I was love bombed so much. If you were to put me at dinner with another couple, I would have thought that my relationship was even healthier than the one that I was with. He was overdoing the supportiveness, the being gentle and the being nice. It was more so the sudden switches. That was when I realized something wasn't right. When there would be sudden, I'd see rage. I would see the way that he was erratic or his driving. There was a sense of not feeling safe, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And it took a long time. I don't know if that applies for everybody, but I do know that everybody's experience is different. But what we can do as friends is when that person is ready, and if they're not, that's okay. But ask questions. You ask them questions about the relationship that they're in, especially if you don't see them with the partner often. And if you do and you spot that something's not right, it's a good idea to continue to work out what's the best thing to do for that friend and not just give up on them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, it is very hard. As a friend, you're seeing someone you love that is going through something so horrible, and they either don't even see it or they see it, but they can't disengage yet. And it's really hard because your instinct for a lot of us would be like to just kind of yank them out of there, right? And just like go, get out of there. What are you doing? It is really, really hard as that friend or family member because we love them so much and we see them suffering. But just understand that they have to go through their own process.
Yeah.
And it can take that time. And the best thing that you can do is to be that solid rock there for them, that they know that you're there, you are available for help, you're available for support, and you believe in them, that they are worthy of more than this. And definitely if they share things that happened in a relationship, definitely you can affirm that's not okay. That doesn't sound healthy, because they might be in that gaslighty kind of situation where their partner is trying to make them feel like they're too sensitive. Oh, maybe it's just me being too sensitive. No, that's actually not okay. That's not healthy. That's not how it's supposed to be in a relationship. So by you affirming that as the friend or family member, it can help them to anchor this sense of self, of their reality, their truth, their voice, their worthiness. This is so, so incredibly important for being able to leave.
Yeah. And I think it's important to emphasize the importance of boundaries. You know, encourage your friend to maybe seek help and a therapist, not because there's something wrong with them, but just because it's good to talk to someone about your relationship. It's actually part of being in a new phase or a new transition in life to see a therapist. And I think there is a bit of a stigma around that as well, unfortunately. People are like, oh, seeing a therapist, that means there's something wrong with me. I'm not going to do that until it gets really, really bad. And I think it's also a good thing to just be a really good listener. At the end of the day, listening without judgment and validating a person's experiences is so important. And that's what a good friend does. A good friend is not someone that will take another person's side. I know for me, I had a friend of over 10 years who I thought was a good friend, who I was trusting with things that I was going through and sharing from a really vulnerable place, from the heart. And she went and told my narcissistic, abusive partner everything that was going on. And he used that against me. And the betrayal was so huge. That was more hurtful than losing the relationship was a celebration. Obviously, there was a lot of processing. There was the grief of not turning out to be what I thought, but it was a good thing. But losing the friend and feeling the betrayal of that friend who was so manipulated as well, that was really hard for a little bit. And I look back with such appreciation now for the people that stood by me that didn't cast judgment. These were words that were spoken to me word for word. Do you know that you're in an emotionally abusive relationship, that you're being psychologically abused? Do you know that this is not right and you may go back? And if you do, whatever choice that you make, I will be there for you. And whatever decision that you make, I will support you and I will not judge you. And I will always appreciate those types of friendships. And I think as friends, we need to be able to be that solid for someone, solid enough that we're not going to be influenced by what someone else says who we don't even know. Understand as well that I think people have a lot of masks. So I think it's really important to understand as well that it's really easy for a narcissist to manipulate. That is what they've grown up with. It's not something that they can just switch on and off. So they've been able to master that skill for probably decades. And so it's nobody's fault, but it is something that can easily happen to adults, men and women alike.
Yeah, that's so beautiful what you said that was said to you by the friend. I really love that. And it's really inspiring. I just wanted to add something around the therapy thing. If you're going to just normal kind of marriage counselor or couples therapist, often if you do go couple therapy with a narcissist is like often just make things worse. And it's just a heads up around that, because we went to 3 different marriage counselors and each time things just got worse because they can often really charm the therapist.
Yes.
If the therapist who's not specifically specializes in narcissism or abuse or stuff like that, they can very easily fall under the charm of the narcissist. And then it'll turn out to be that your partner and the therapist against you in a therapy situation. And I've been gaslighted by therapists, seriously, not their fault, just because they were so charmed by my ex. And if I don't understand that this is abuse, because here's the thing, it's different from normal, even if you're just not even couple therapy, just going to a normal therapist or a coach, they would usually do is they would challenge you, right? A good therapist will not just be like, oh, poor you, and that it, like, they'll challenge you a little bit. They'll get you to think and to see your side of things and all that. And that can be really great in a normal situation. But when you're under abuse, you're already usually blaming yourself for everything. And you're being blamed for everything by the other side as well. And so if the therapy goes down that route, it might only just further ingrain that pattern of I'm just blaming myself for everything. And it's really important to, yes, take responsibility for my patterns that are leading me to stay. Yes, that's important, but not as an excuse to stay. Does that make sense? Because I fell into that trap of I need to take responsibility for where I'm violent, where I'm abused, and kind of look at the projections and all the spiritual stuff around like, oh, he's just a projection of the violence in me and rah, rah, rah. And like, I need to work on my own violence. Like, no, that was not it. That was not it. I needed to see how this is maybe a reflection of how I'm violent towards myself. And actually the most loving thing to do would be to get up and get the hell out of there. It wasn't about working things out with him. So this is just a little warning, especially around the spiritual stuff that can be a huge bypass sometimes that makes people actually stay a lot longer than what's needed. I know that was what it was for me. It made me stay longer.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you said about the narcissist manipulating his therapist. Not all therapists are trained in dealing with people with narcissistic personality disorders or people that have high levels of narcissism. And narcissists are great at manipulation. I keep coming back to this. They are very, very good. That's how they've survived. That's how they've gotten by in society. They are people that deep down, unfortunately, are sadly very, very broken inside, and they have very low self-esteem. And the only way they can, I guess, function is creating fantasies in their head and also doing things that will charm and manipulate people to get their way, to have their way in society. And so charming and manipulating their therapist is a common occurrence. And there are books that talk about how narcissists and psychopaths are really, really hard to diagnose. And that's why we shouldn't be putting labels on people as well. But I think that ultimately we've just got to come back to the fact that we need to be really careful when we are out in the dating world, because it's like being thrown into the ocean. In the ocean, out in the big sea, there are sharks, there's fish, there's whales, there's dolphins, but there are sharks. And if we aren't careful of the sharks and we don't create a safety net or a cage, we can let the shark in. And Efrat, you've touched on that earlier. Some people have holes in their cage and they're big enough for a shark to enter, where some people have really got their cage nice and secure. And that's not to say that we need to completely close our hearts and not let anybody in. We just need to have safety measures in place and know how to check in with ourselves and know what feels right and what feels wrong. If someone is pushing your boundaries or boundary bashing, if someone is not respecting no, if someone is possessive, If someone won't give you space and is completely overbearing, they are definitely not healthy dynamics that you want to have in your life. And I think it's really important to understand that before you go into another relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, wow, there's so much in that. Wait, where do I start? First of all, I would say the labels are important just for the beginning, I would say. You know, for me, it was really helpful to understand abusive dynamics, narcissistic personalities, all that stuff at the beginning of my healing process and the beginning of getting out of there. Because there are certain communication strategies as well with, they're often referred to like high conflict personalities. So there's different communication strategies. It was important for the beginning. And then putting away the labels and the overly being focused on the other person, that was really important. Next step. Okay, so understand that this is who they are and they're probably not going to change. And this is the strategies I need to have in place for communication. And now just really 180 degrees, turn that lens back inward into myself. Because this often happens in abusive relationships is that we're hyperly focused on the other person because they're so erratic and so unexpected, right? So we're like, oh, when's the next blow going to come kind of thing. We become hyper vigilant and overly focused on them. So start to bring that lens back to you. Start to bring your attention back to you. What do I love? What are my passions? What makes me sparkle, right? What makes me thrive as a person? And start to give a lot more of your time, attention, energy to those things which make you thrive and make you happy, regardless of that other person. And really anchoring in your vision for your life. What are you creating for you, regardless of that person? What is it that you would love in your life? Being really anchored in your vision is a huge part of this. And then the somatic practices, what you were saying of like, what feels good to me, often we're disconnected from our body. We're disconnected from our knowing, our intuition. So we don't even know what we feel.
Mm-hmm.
This is where those practices of getting back into the body and spending time just feeling, just noticing what is going on inside and connecting to sexual energy, that's your life force energy. Because the abuser, they steal your energy. They live off of your energy. And connecting to sexual energy, which is your life force energy, means that you tap back in to almost like this internal well of energy that cannot be taken away from you if you don't give it away. And that is amazing. For me, I think that was one of the most important things that helped me in getting out of there was coming back to the body, noticing this doesn't feel right. Something needs to change, or this feels really good. I'm going to follow that. Start following what feels good in the body and following pleasure and using pleasure for downregulating, for being able to relax that hypervigilance, right? Those are just key points in this. And when you do that, because you know how you said, like, there's all those sharks out there, right? But what if we don't need to worry about the sharks because we become like this smelly fish that sharks hate that smell? Or you know what I mean? Because a woman who's like, or man, whatever, a person who's super anchored in their body, in their power, in their pleasure, in their passion, in their aliveness, in their life force, and they're really anchored in that, they are like kryptonite to a shark because you can't be manipulated. You don't have these big gaping holes inside of you that you're looking for someone to fill. Like now I'm in the dating world again and I just don't attract that kind of man at all. There was only one person that I met just one time that I had a sense of like, oh, maybe there's something a bit off about him. I'm not sure. And they were the only man that ever ghosted me. You know, there's ghosting is like this big thing everyone talks about.
Left you on red.
Yeah, he was the only guy who we had one date and then he just disappeared. And I was like, wow, okay. I think he might have been a narcissist. And he just smelled me. You know, and went like, no, there's nowhere here that I can hook. That's
yeah.
Yeah, know the red flags, know what to be aware of. Yes, very important. But even more important, like become a smelly fish that sharks will just run away from. And you won't have to worry about this.
Yeah, that is so good, Efrat. I love your theory and analogy of the smelly fish, because I think that it's not that you have to repel all men or all women, whatever you're into, but it's that you don't keep attracting the same type of person with the same wounds that will cause that kind of chaos in your life.
I was at first, by the way. When I first left my ex, the first time that I left him, I was still attracting that kind of man at the beginning. Yeah, so it took some time. It took a few years, actually. I don't want to depress anyone, but it did. For me, it took a few years, but it also took me a few years to find these somatic practices I'm talking about. So I think it would have happened quicker if I had that in place from the beginning. But yeah, it can take some time. And this is probably why it's such a good idea to not just jump straight in with another person.
I think what we'll do is we'll link that to the show notes, the somatic practices, so that people can dive into that kind of work. I guess for anyone that's listening, if you want to connect with Efrat and you want to work on that, on experiencing more pleasure, connecting more to your sexuality and your sexual energy, which is actually different to just the physical act of sex. It's actually more of, it's about that abundance of energy that comes to you, that source. And like Efrat said, no one can take that away. And when you're tapped into that, you glow and you show up differently and you set healthy boundaries and you know when to say no and you know how to be kind and loving towards yourself and to respect yourself as well.
Absolutely. And thanks for making that distinction, because you can be a person who's really connected to their sexuality and be very erotically alive and thriving and passionate and all these things, regardless of whether you are in a relationship or not. If you are in a relationship, regardless of if you're having sex or not, like, this is really important to understand. So this is for you. This is for your aliveness.
And it's just one final thing to add. It's also our creativity. So it's not just our passion necessarily in a man and a woman or a woman and a woman, man and man dynamic, but it's actually our creative energy. It's our life force. Our sexual energy is the thing that drives us in our business, in our creativity, even in our work. And if we don't have it, you know, we start to run on empty. And you were spot on about the fact that when you're with a person of high conflict, they are draining that. They are relying on what you have, the source that you have, as their supply, and they pretty much take that out from the people around them. So we've got to be able to protect ourselves and know how to set those really healthy boundaries.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for bringing that up around the creativity. And there's so much that opens up potentially, or could open up, for someone who is connected to that source, because it's inside of us.
Yeah,
it really does not depend on anyone else. And that is power. That is bringing back the power into your own hands.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Efrat, thank you so much for what you've shared with us today. And I'd love to wrap this up with some rapid fire questions. I know we've gone a bit over time, so I'm actually going to ask you two rapid fire questions today. But we are going to do another session, another recording of this, so there will be more. But I would love to know, if you could leave the world with one message, what would it be?
Actually, what we just said, that your sexuality is yours. It doesn't depend on anyone else. And it is one of your biggest resources for living a happy and fulfilled life.
Yeah, that's good. And what has been one big takeaway that you've had recently that changed the way you see the world or changed the way you show up?
It was around attachment styles. I don't know if you know around that, but that when I am in anxious mode, that means that the person that I'm dealing with is not actually right for me. So rather than being judging that, my anxieties, understanding that when anxious comes up, it's a sign that I'm dealing with someone who's not secure, who's not like the right person. So that has been a really big aha for me, because I was judging the anxiety, that anxiousness. Yeah, that's been huge. So now I show up in a way, I think, that is a lot more loving towards where I am and understanding that specific dynamic.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I totally resonate with you in that regard. And that's a really good takeaway. Efrat, this has been such a insightful conversation, and I'm so thankful for what you have shared. Thank you so much for showing up and sharing so vulnerably. And for the listeners, I hope you found this episode helpful, and I hope that this is a catalyst as well for positive change in some way, shape, or form. If you can take a moment to share this with someone that needs to hear this episode or will benefit from hearing this, definitely hit the share button. And also, if you enjoyed this episode or you tune in regularly to the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast, don't forget to hit follow or subscribe. And if you're feeling generous, a quick rating or a review definitely goes a long way. Efrat, once again, thank you so much. I can't wait to catch up with you to hear more about the amazing work that you do, and also to share your story with more people in the world.
Thank you so much. This has been so wonderful, and the vulnerability that you also share is really inspiring. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been wonderful having you on. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.